are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your Monday host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we'll be chatting with Andy Kamenetsky from Locked On Lakers as poor NBA officiating in Lakers versus Celtics leads to some very choice commentary from LeBron James and company over the weekend. Plus, the Lakers get some much-needed frontcourt help with the return of Anthony Davis and by trading for Rui Hachimura. Then we chat with Keith Pompey from Locked On Sixers to discuss what kind of statement did Joel Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers make with their recent win against Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets, and what have been the keys to Philly's dominance since early December. Lastly, we chat with Joe Mullinax from Locked On Grizzlies to figure out why the Grizzlies have struggled so much over their recent five-game losing streak, what happened to finally get things back on track against the Indiana Pacers, plus the Memphis Grizzlies scorekeeper being accused of inflating Jaren Jackson Jr.'s defensive numbers over the weekend in a Reddit post to set the NBA world ablaze. All that and more come up in just one moment. As always, thank you so much for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day, free and available on all podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, including YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. We do sincerely thank you for making Locked On NBA part of your day every single day, whether it's on the way to work, in the gym, on your lunch break. Thanks for making Locked On NBA part of your day. Now, today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON. That's prizepicks.com, promo code LOCKEDON. Joining us now is Andy Kamenetsky, host of Locked On Lakers. You can find wherever you listen to your podcast, as well as YouTube. Just search Locked On Lakers. And Andy, the Lakers coming fresh off of what has to be just a brutal loss to the Boston Celtics, 125-121 at the end of overtime. A game that was very much winnable for this Lakers team. One of the better games that they played all season. And the outcry kind of from this game at the end, the no call at the end of regulation, LeBron James drives to the basket, clearly gets fouled. The refs swallow their whistles. And then the Lakers wind up losing this game. There were some very choice words from LeBron, from AD after this game. Darvin Ham as well, maybe playing things a bit more, you know, politically safe. But just what is your reaction? What do you make of the reactions from the team and kind of the general state of officiating kind of as it relates to the Lakers, but also the NBA at large this season?
Well, I mean, first of all, I understand exactly where they were coming from. I mean, Brian and I, my brother, who co-hosts the show with me, we did a Saturday night mini pod, and we decided that we were going to get into specific game reaction for Monday's show, and we devoted the entire 15 minutes to just what the bleep, man. Like, what the bleep? Like, because it's not just the fact that this was an obvious call, and forget the last 2 minute report, which might as well have just been like a shrug emoji. Like, the league actually informed the Lakers that they got this wrong before the last 2 minute report even came out, which is the quickest admission I can recall ever seeing from the league. Yeah, we blew this. And does that mean the Lakers would have automatically won? No. LeBron still had to sink one of two free throws. But he at least needed to be given the opportunity. And then in overtime, the Lakers clearly were on tilt. Like, it took them a couple minutes, I think, just to get going in it. You know, they got off to a bad foot because Patrick Beverley decided to go up to one of the refs and show them a still digital photo of this, which, while objectively hilarious and certainly creative, you know that's going to be a tech, and you can't start overtime on the road against a team that is, objectively speaking, better than you, giving them an opportunity to start 1 point ahead. I mean, that's just stupid. Again, hilarious, but stupid. And then the Lakers executed really badly in the last minute on both ends in overtime. So, you know, there were things, obviously, that were in their own hands with losing this game, but it doesn't change the fact that they got legitimately robbed of a chance to win this game. And as LeBron pointed out afterwards, it's not the first time it's happened to him this season where Not saying this as a Laker fan and host, not saying this as somebody who listens to Laker fans all the time at Cam Brothers on Twitter, ESPN 710, where I often host, that sort of thing. I'm talking the league has admitted they've missed calls on LeBron. They've missed calls with the Lakers in general. They don't have the luxury of time right now. They have no margin for error, whether their own or the referees. So to get back to your original question, and apologies for venting a bit, but the state right now is just frustration. That's where they are right now, is just general frustration.
It does feel quite unacceptable, right? For two teams, two marquee NBA teams on the biggest stage, right? Nationally televised game, to miss such an obvious call at that point. Like, the NBA needs to be better. And I've seen some people throw out some ideas, right? Of what could be the solution to this, right? Do you reintroduce like replays late in the game so that the referees can, you know, get some of these calls at the end, right? Where, hey, we know we messed that up, we're going to go back and fix it, right? Or do you maybe add like a fourth official to, you know, maybe keep up with the speed of the game? Like, is there an idea that kind of you think maybe works and kind of irons out some of these issues?
I've been calling,
they just need to be better.
Well, they need to be better, but to be fair to the refs, the game has gotten so fast and so spread out. I've been calling for a few years for a fourth official. I just don't think that three people can really handle this. You know, the concept of more replays and stuff like that, it's more complicated than the NFL. Because the football often comes to natural stopping points anyway, more so than basketball. So, you know, let's say the refs miss that, but, you know, LeBron or somebody else gets an offensive rebound. Do you stop it there? Like, you know what I mean? Like, do you give them the chance to put it back, then blow the play dead? Like, there's a lot to
try. Yeah, where do you rewind the game to at that point?
So maybe there is a way of doing this with replay and stuff like that. It's just going to be very complicated. To me, a simpler and more obvious approach to trying to help us, if nothing else, would be a fourth official.
Aside from the referee shenanigans that the Lakers are dealing with at the beginning of this past week, they made a trade. They added a new member to the purple and gold, Rui Hachimura from the Washington Wizards, trading Kendrick Nunn and a few second rounders to pick him up. What does Rui provide for this Lakers team moving forward?
First of all, he provides size. This is a team that along the front line, you know, the four or five positions has just needed more optionality, particularly when AD was out. But even now, you know, he in a lot of ways reminds me of what Markieff Morris was for the Lakers the year they won the championship. Somebody that allows them to play what I used to call medium ball, which was, you know, not the hugest version of the Lakers, which was JaVale McGee, Anthony Davis, and LeBron, you know, plus Danny Green, KCP. Like, that is an enormous team. But when you had Markieff out there, they were still larger than most teams. I think Rui gives them that type of optionality. You know, for a while, the team was just too guard heavy. He gives them some scoring also in options in ways that they didn't have. Really beyond AD and LeBron, you know, Thomas Bryant has been pretty good in this time that he was filling in for LeBron, but he's not somebody that can create his own shot, whereas Rui can. And I think even though he's not necessarily a fantastic rebounder himself, he's solid. And just his size out there, we've seen it in the two games he's played with the Lakers. Him being out there sometimes just makes it easier for other guys to get rebounds. And the Lakers have been getting killed a lot on the glass this year.
Well, Rui also isn't the only frontline reinforcement that the Lakers got this past week, because they got a guy back named Anthony Davis, who was sorely missed. He's averaging 18.5 points, 11 boards in his couple games since returning. How has he looked since getting back on the court? Is there like a minutes restriction at all with him, or is it just, you know, full blast, let's go?
Well, he was supposed to be on a minutes restriction the first game back. It had been reported at 20 to 24, but he played around 26. And I think it really spoke to the necessity of the Lakers needing to win that game. Even though the Lakers were up, I don't know, like 8, 10 points, something like that in the last few minutes, I think Darvin Ham was just not going to take any chances. AD looked really good in this game, particularly in the second half. Second game back against Boston, I thought he looked good, not great. At times I thought he was pretty impactful. At times he looked to me like a guy still figuring out his timing. You know, he came off the bench in the first half, then started the second half of the game. But obviously just him being back is a major piece that this team was missing. I think it might take a game or two for him to start looking consistently like Anthony Davis. And that game is not going to be Monday against the Nets. The Lakers have already ruled him and LeBron out. I hope it's just because they're playing the Nets, then the Knicks back to back, and they're just preemptively making a choice on back to backs, especially coming off an overtime. I hope it's nothing else with either one of those guys. But I think once you get a couple games of AD just back in rhythm, you're going to remember why he was so missed in the first place.
Can the Lakers work to increase that margin for error moving forward? Where can they go now that they, well, you know, knock on wood, have a healthy LeBron James and Anthony Davis? Of course, you'll have us covered for all that and more over at Locked On Lakers. Andy, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Anytime, man.
Coming up, what kind of statement did Joel Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers make with their recent win against Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets? What have been the keys to Philly's dominance since early December? And what moves, if any, will the Sixers make ahead of the NBA trade deadline? But first, today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Next game, how about Joel Embiid to score more than 26.5 points? What about LeBron James to have more than 7.5 rebounds? How about Nikola Jokic to have less than 9.5 assists? Or what about Steph Curry to have more than 3.5 three-pointers made? So what is Prize Picks? It's daily fantasy sports, but how does it work? Basically, you pick 2 to 6 players. If they score more or less than their Prize Pick projection, you can win up to 25 times back on your money on any entry that you submit. There's no competing against other people. It's just you versus the projections available. Best part, PrizePicks offers projections on any sport that you watch. That's NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, PGA, you name it, they've got you covered over at PrizePicks. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less, just 1 minute. It's that simple. They're safe, they offer incredibly fast withdrawals, currently operational in over 30 states and Canada. Download the PrizePicks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON. If you deposit $100, PrizePicks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, PrizePicks will give you $50. Don't forget to enter promo code LOCKEDON at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, thanks for making Locked On NBA part of your day every single day. Free and available on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. Joining us now is the host of Locked On Sixers, Keith Pompey, who you can follow wherever you listen to your podcast and on YouTube. Just search Locked On Sixers. Now, Keith, 32-16, number 2 in the Eastern Conference. This Sixers team, they're 20-4. Look, they lost to Houston way back in like early December. And I don't know if they just lost to Houston. They were like, okay, we cannot, no more of this, right? We got to set the ship straight. They're 20-4 since that game, almost 2 months straight and only 4 losses. They've only lost twice in the new year. And this most recent win against the Denver Nuggets, Joel Embiid's stat line in this 126-119 win against Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets is just absurd. 47 points. 18 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks in 38 minutes of run. What kind of statement did Embiid and the Sixers make with this most recent win against the Nuggets?
I mean, I think the statement that Embiid made is like, hey, y'all better start paying more attention to me. Like, I am the MVP, or I deserve to be the MVP. I mean, that was the biggest thing that I came away from that game. Secondly, the Sixers, the statement was like, as far as the team, don't forget about us. Like, you know, we have James Harden. You know, he's changed the way he's played. And we're dangerous. Like, you look at Boston, you look at Milwaukee, you think of Brooklyn. But you really, even though the Sixers were winning, people weren't having them as being in that top tier. You know what I mean? It was like, yeah, they're winning, but, you know, but I think this game on national TV against Denver, the top team in the West, is basically putting people on notice.
You mentioned the MVP race there for a moment, you know, talking about maybe Embiid should, you know, be getting his flowers. Where is he in that MVP race in your eyes right now? Where should he be in the MVP race?
I mean, I think he should be up there. You know, it's weird. I mean, there's a lot of basketball left. But I do think, and I'm not just saying this because because I cover the 76ers, but the way he's playing and the way you looked at it yesterday, how he took over the third quarter and did what he had to do, you know, he should be the front runner right now, I believe. I mean, it wasn't always that way, but the reason why I'm saying he should be the front runner now is because, like you said, they're 20-4, and he's been averaging over 30 points during that time. You know, here's a guy right now who's leading the league in scoring. You know, so a lot of their success is basically has a lot to do with what he does, scoring points and defending and grabbing rebounds and all that other thing. So I think that he should be the front runner.
Was he snubbed too as an all-star starter? I mean, you look at the Eastern Conference, you got Giannis, Durant, and Tatum ahead of him on the all-star team, but he's the best center in the conference.
Yeah, you know what? It's weird. He was snubbed, but at the same time, I think it was more to do with the way that the people who get picked. Like right now, you have to pick three front court players, and then you have two guards, right? And you can argue that all four of those front court players deserve the start. I mean, you can make that argument. I mean, Jason Tatum is playing well. Giannis is Giannis. Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. But I just feel like it's one of those things where right now it becomes a popularity contest. So it wasn't like it wasn't the media. Some people wanted to say the media like ambushed them. No. And it wasn't the players. Right. So I just think that it was a bad situation for him. But I think now when you look at these guys, Durant, Tatum, Embiid, all three of them, they can play on the floor together. Right. Giannis, too. So I feel like the problem is that right about now, you just need to rethink how you pick these teams.
Looking, I mean, well, at this point, maybe it just adds an even bigger chip to Embiid's shoulder for the rest of the season. But you know, looking at this most recent stretch of just utter dominance from the Sixers, the 20-4 stretch that they've basically been on, Embiid is obviously a gigantic part of that. What else is going well for the Sixers over the stretch that's allowing them to play at such a high level?
You know, there's two things. The number one thing is I have to say James Harden. And the thing about James Harden, when you talked about that game when he came back 25 games ago, is when he was in Houston, his first game back, and I felt like he was trying to be vintage James Harden. I felt like he was trying to, you know, take people off the dribble between his legs, the shot clock's running down, and he's doing a step back three. Well, it wasn't falling, right? The next game, he comes out and he's trying to be the best point guard that they can be. He's getting the ball is moving. He's playing at a quicker pace. He's feeding Embiid a lot. And I felt like right then and there, James Harden, when he decided that I'm going to be a pass first point guard, that's when the 76ers start taking off. That's the one thing. The second thing is when they brought Tyrese Maxey, when he came back into the fold, they struggled a little bit, but then they started bringing him off the bench again, full time. And I felt like that brought more balance to the starting lineup because Maxey and Harden, you know Harden, he's been in Houston for a while, great player, offensive player, but defense he lacks. Maxey, a scorer, but he lacks on the defensive end. I think when you split those two guys up and you bring in a guy at DeAnthony Melton, that brings defense to the starting lineup. And I think that enables them to beat teams like them.
What right now, Keith, do you kind of look at as the biggest needs for the Sixers ahead of the NBA trade deadline? Is this a team that's kind of content with where they're at? Do you envision them making some moves ahead of the deadline? And if so, who are some of the names that could be, you know, on the trading block?
You know, it's weird. Like the names that we hear that's on the trading block are, let's say, Jaden Springer, a young rook. I mean, second year player, right? He was their first round draft pick 2 years ago. Furkan Korkmaz could be on the go too. Matisse Thybulle, he's always a guy that could go. A guy that people were always talking about leaving was Tobias Harris. I think the Sixers would be foolish to trade him. You know, that's my opinion. But right now, what the Sixers really need is the biggest need they need is a backup center. Nothing against Montrezl Harrell. I like him a lot. But what they need is they need another big body. They need someone who can be a situational guy who can come in there, grab rebounds, and be a rim protector when Joel is not on the floor. You know what I mean? Montrez is good, but he's also a situational guy, right? So you need a big, sturdy, I'm going to do everything like a gritty rebounding machine off the bench to help them make this push. They also need to look at a backup point guard. Because when you look at it, if you take James Harden off the floor, you're asking yourself, well, who's going to be the point guard? And they really don't have one. They have a lot of scoring guards, combo guards, but they don't have a legitimate backup point guard. So that's something I can see them probably going after. If they can't get it at the trade, go after in the buyout market to see who's available. But those are the 76ers' two biggest needs.
Can the Sixers continue playing at this elite level? What moves, if any, will they make ahead of the NBA trade deadline, or will they be players on the NBA buyout market? Of course, y'all just covered for all that and more over at Locked On Sixers. Keith, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks, man.
Coming up, why have the Memphis Grizzlies struggled so much over this recent five-game losing streak? What happened for them to finally get things back on track against the Indiana Pacers? Plus, the Memphis Grizzlies scorekeeper being accused of inflating Jaren Jackson Jr.'s defensive numbers over the weekend. We'll break down all of that for you in just one moment. But first, today's episode is brought to you by TurboTax. Go to TurboTax and don't do your taxes. Meet with an expert who will do them for you. TurboTax experts can relieve you from the stress of taxes and file for you so you can do not taxes. Show your eyes something that are not taxes. Unpack a moving box of not taxes. Taste not taxes. Sing not taxes a lullaby. Hope not taxes sleeps throughout the night. Grab a saddle and ride not taxes off into the beautiful sunset. With TurboTax, an expert will do your taxes from start to finish, ensuring that your taxes are done right, guaranteed, so you can relax. Feels good to be done with your taxes, doesn't it? Come to TurboTax and don't do your taxes. Visit TurboTax.com to learn more. Intuit TurboTax, full service products only, video meeting while expert does your taxes required. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, thanks for making Locked On NBA part of your day every single day. Joining us now is the host of Locked On Grizzlies, Joe Mullinax, who you can follow on Twitter at Joe Mullinax. And wherever you get your podcasts, just search Locked On Grizzlies, available wherever you listen to your podcasts, as well as YouTube. Joe, the Grizzlies were finally able to end their five-game skid with a 112-100 win against the Indiana Pacers. A triple-double for Ja Morant, fantastic night. Jaren Jackson Jr. adding 28 points, 5 blocks, and a steal. Wait. The Memphis scorekeeper actually just updated Triple J's stats. It actually looks like 15 blocks and 7 steals for Jaren Jackson Jr. Just got to get those numbers right. Look, we're gonna discuss, you know, what was going on with the Grizzlies, the losing streak, how they were able to kind of set things right. But let's start first, Joe, with the Reddit post that set the NBA world ablaze over the weekend. For those unfamiliar, somebody took to Reddit and made a post entitled "Memphis Grizzlies Scorekeeper Posting Fraudulent Numbers" in regards to Jaren Jackson Jr. and his DPOY campaign. And this was one of the craziest, like, 24 hours in the NBA landscape that I think I've ever seen, Joe, with the amount of buzz and publicity that this post got, to the point where, like, Vegas odds makers were removing Triple J from DPOY candidacy lists. You had NBA guys like The Ringer's Kevin O'Connor and ESPN's Kurt Goldberry kind of talking, dedicating time and Twitter threads to breaking down all the film of, like, every block and steal for Triple J this season. Walk me through your thoughts, your reactions, your tinfoil hat theories, whatever you've got about the scandal, if you will.
I'm going to date myself here a little bit. I hope that's okay, Jackson. Have you ever seen the film Men in Black?
I have, yes.
The original with Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith. I believe it came out in 1997.
Yes, great cinema.
There's a quote from that film that has stayed with me since I saw it in theaters back when I was 10 years old. And it goes something like this. I'm paraphrasing slightly. An individual person is smart. People are dumb. And that is my general take on the entire nonsense that was all of that. I cannot tell you enough, Jackson, how proud and happy I am that I was not on Twitter on Saturday. You know what I was doing? It was my son's second birthday. It was the Royal Rumble. I was on Twitter late at night on Saturday night because I was tweeting about the greatest of all time, Roman Reigns, and the great storyline involving Sami Zayn. That is what I was focused on Saturday. Because you know what? I like being productive with my life. I enjoy spending time with my family and investing in my hobbies that are truly enjoyable. I am not someone who would devote hours of my time to a player on an opposing fan base or on an opposing team and breaking down stats and video over and over again to try to prove something that only proved two things. One, that individual has no idea how stats are counted in the NBA. And two, that individual has no idea that after every game, these games are audited, almost like taxes, in terms of confirming stats, in terms of making sure that somebody did miss something. They take points away, they take blocks and steals away. They do this literally all the time, literally every single game. And Jackson, I know you know the answer to this, but I'm going to tell the person that's watching this right now. I'm looking at you, right into your soul, through your core of your life, and I'm going to make it very clear to you. If you're listening, just envision my eyes drilling a hole through the center of your skull, all right? The NBA is involved in billions of dollars from gambling, fantasy basketball. Do you really think that they are going to risk it all for the power forward of the Memphis Grizzlies, who until 2 years ago, none of you cared about? Not a single one of you gave a damn about the Memphis Grizzlies, even when they were good during grit and grind. Oh, Tony Allen kicked Chris Paul in the face. That's funny. And you couldn't have given a crap less about the Memphis Grizzlies. But now it's a conspiracy. Now the NBA has it out for everyone else, and they're just trying to help the Memphis Grizzlies. It was the stupidest thing I think I've encountered in a long time. And I am very happy that I did not put any energy into it until this conversation. And I'll probably talk about it on Locked On Grizzlies and other places. So I appreciate you, Jackson, for giving me the opportunity to just let it all out.
Speaking of the game against the Pacers, the end to the losing streak, kind of riding the ship there, the Shannon Sharpe curse being lifted from the organization. Indiana led by as many as 19 in this game. Like it did not look like the losing streak was going to come to an end. It looked like it was going to be loss number six. And then the Grizzlies were able to turn things around. How were they able to turn this game around, and kind of what were some of the mistakes that were cropping up over this recent losing streak, and how can this Grizzlies team kind of prevent those moving forward?
Well, the biggest thing that Memphis decided to start doing for the first time in a while is make shots. Of course, the goal of basketball is to put a round ball through a round cylinder, and you get points for that, Jackson. I know you know that. The Grizzlies forgot that for a time, and they especially forgot it during the Indiana Pacers game, just abysmal shooting, especially from beyond the arc. That's been something that's been a problem for Memphis throughout their season, and, you know, I mentioned grit and grind earlier, throughout their existence, really, over the last 10 years. They just haven't been able to find a shooter for whatever reason, or multiple shooters. Desmond Bain didn't play in this game. John Conchar, who at least theoretically is a shooter. You have to actually shoot the ball to be a good shooter, but I digress. They were down the guys, or at least a couple of the guys that in theory can do that consistently. And that puts you in a position to count on Zaire Williams, who's still kind of finding himself as a three-point shooter. You could argue he's never really found himself as a three-point shooter. Tyus Jones had a strong game in that way, but that's not something that, you know, aside from the last year or so, that's really been a part of his game at a major spot. So I think that for them, you know, the early issues in the Indy game were a lot of the same things that they faced in their losing streak, the fact that they weren't able to hit the broad side of a barn in terms of making a bucket, and the fact that their defense was not consistent enough. A lot of times for this young Grizzlies team, defense becomes offense, and that just didn't, that was inconsistent on the West Coast swing, and it was inconsistent in that first half. As the defense picked up in the third and fourth quarters, you started to see the Grizzlies find themselves offensively. There was a rhythm. They did really well against the Pacers zone defense, which Memphis has had issues at times when people go zone against them, but they were moving the ball crisply. I think Morant had 15 assists, which is extremely impressive for him. I think a lot of it has to do with getting back to what they are successful with basketball-wise, and that's playing strong defense, moving the ball, and creating opportunities for other guys to score off of the, you know, the guy that everybody tries to blitz, everybody tries to force the ball out of his hands. That's John Morant.
The Grizzlies are also playing right now without their big man in the middle in Steven Adams due to a right knee injury. Right now, what's the timetable on Adams and kind of, how has Taylor Jenkins kind of asked or who has he asked to kind of step up in his absence?
Well, it's 3 to 5 weeks when the Grizzlies made the announcement that he was going to be out earlier last week. And, you know, that kind of puts him around the All-Star break, I think, is a realistic goal. Obviously, he is one of the tougher individuals in the NBA. You know, there's a reason during Cardigan Gate, as I like to call it, that Shannon Sharp did not list the large Steven Adams in his list of Grizzlies related people that didn't want any piece of him. It's because he doesn't want any piece of Steven Adams, right? So he's large. He's very good at being large. I think we've talked about Steven before. Excellent screen setter, really good passer, underrated passer. He allows Jaren to do a lot of the things that he does defensively. Steven Adams contributes to winning basketball without having to shoot the basketball, which is pretty valuable on this Grizzlies team. You want Ja and Dez and Jaren to be shooting the ball, to a lesser extent, Dylan Brooks. You don't want Steven Adams to do that. I think that we'll see him in terms of his just physical toughness. He'll want to get back out there around the All-Star break, makes sense. Coming out of the All-Star break would be better because that just gives him another natural week where he's not playing and rehabbing. But again, the team's not playing, which is nice. So I'm hopeful that first game back from the All-Star break will be when we see Steven again. And that would put him, I think, missing about 10 games or so total, going back to the last few that he's missed. And then, you know, they've got about 7 left here until that All-Star break. So he's a vital piece of what they're trying to do. You know, DeMichael and I talk a lot about Bane and Ja and Jaren, obviously. But DeMichael always is careful to point out that Dylan Brooks is one of the best plus-minus players in the NBA, not just on the Grizzlies, but in the NBA. His shot selection is frustrating, is probably the nicest way to put it. But Dylan contributes to winning basketball, and he has the last several years during this Ja Morant era. Steven Adams has come in and done similar things to Jonas Valanciunas without the usage of Jonas Valanciunas. It's helped unlock the Grizzlies' offense in a lot of different ways, and he's had a better season this season defensively than he did last. So those are two guys that are pretty invaluable to Memphis. And obviously Dylan's playing, but without Steven Adams, you know, they're going to have to lean on guys like Brandon Clark, who had a really strong game against the Pacers, was a part of that zone breaking kind of flash to the middle, get the shot up off the floater. Clark's able to do that. Xavier Tillman had a good game in terms of rebounding and setting screens. He's probably the closest thing Memphis has now to what Adams can do. You can't replace Steven Adams, but to paraphrase the movie Moneyball, you can replicate in the aggregate, right? So between Brandon Clark and between Xavier Tillman, trying to replicate what Adams brings to the table in terms of rebounding, in terms of screen setting. And they also have a chance to play a little bit more uniquely because Tillman and Clark are more fleet of foot and their lateral quickness is better than Adams. They can do a lot more switching, a lot more stronger hedges defensively. They can do some different coverages. Adams is very good in drop coverage. Every once in a while, if he gets switched onto somebody, he can hold his own. But again, the versatility of the defense expands when it's somebody else other than Steven. Doesn't mean it's going to be executed the way it's supposed to be, but you can throw different things at those guys when Adams is out.
I love it. We got a Men in Black reference and we got a Moneyball reference in one segment. That means
but I haven't seen any of those movies recently. It's just a steel trap up here, Jackson. A steel
there
trap.
We go. That means it was a good segment. Now, hey, will this be the win that kind of rights the ship for the Grizzlies? Will they get back on track after this win against the Pacers? What will they look like moving forward without Steven Adams for the next, you know, month or so, few weeks, however long it takes for him to get back in the lineup? Of course, you'll just cover for all of that and more over at Locked On Grizzlies. Joe, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jackson. Anytime.
That's going to do it for another edition of Locked On NBA. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all podcast platforms. We're also available on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts.